And after 6 games of volleyball tonight, I probably won't want to take a hike. So if we don't finish what we might want to do tonight, we can, he and I may do a little thing together after early breakfast tomorrow morning. But tonight's forum is a kind of a chance for us to catch up on all of the things that I rule off the agenda simply by outlasting you all each morning. And we made a little list of some of the things we want to talk about tonight. I think it'd be good if we'd start with some of them. But there's no reason we have to stick to that agenda. Any number can play. We can do anything about it. And the first of those questions that I'd like to take up, and on which I'd like to hear a good deal from you. Frequently I implied that even in the most dramatic shift of cultures, worldviews, kinds of consciousness, kinds of sensibility, kinds of change, we might very well explore whether there are some values we'd like to carry over from what we now have to what we would want to be. I reminded us quite frequently that large sectors of our society don't read themselves into the purported consensus of the society. Revolutions are about three things: goods, namely things, institutions, ways of getting at goods, and values. And the question this morning was, what about the values that we transport? I've made a good deal of an interesting coincidence of a couple of years ago. A lot of people think that if you have two of these three elements of life, all will be well. But if you think about it a long time, you will not have a fulfilled life if you have goods and institutions but not values, or if you have institutions and values but not goods, or if you have values and goods but not institutions. Somehow these three are in a perfect complementarity. And the little coincidence that always struck me was the State of the Union address by President Johnson, the last president whose name I keep remembering all the time. He's easily my favorite sermon illustration this week. I voted for him. You remember his State of the Union address when he ticked off that we had the greatest national product growth year after year after year for some 20 years, even 1952 to 1960, and that we had never had less unemployment and we'd never had greater growth and never had Dow Jones been higher, et cetera, et cetera. And then he looked around the society and asked, given all that, then why all this restlessness? He was saying we have the goods. He was implying we had the institutions, and he was mystified over the absence of values. Now, the coincidence was the best-selling record that month was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and the best-received and most talked-about band on it was the one called She's Leaving Home, which, as I recall, was a young girl leaving 5 in the morning, and the parents are talking to each other mourning this event, and one of them says to the other, they can't see why, we gave her everything that money could buy. Seemed to me that the president could have gotten his answer from that song. We have goods and institutions, but not values. Now, I have not tried to come on this week as an apocalyptic type. I haven't been preaching Armageddon. I have implied that I personally see at least the potential for some things to carry over, even if some people in our society don't. So in the first few minutes, why don't we all toss in some things that we think we could defend as one of those values. Now, by this, by value, I don't mean an ideal which is in no sense lived out. That's not what we mean. Value is something that is somehow embodied in a society. Not fully realized, but somehow embodied. So to meet the rules of the game, there have to be two things remembered. We're not perfectionists or utopians, so it doesn't mean that it is perfected in our society. In my view of history, it never would be in any society. To be in history is to have to deal with partial failure. So you don't have to come off with something perfect. But the rule from the other side is it has to be a value that is in range of the vast majority of the people of the society, or at least a value that is is not ruled out of the range of any single huge sector of society. What are some of the values if a young Turk student comes along, an SDS dropout who wants to tear down everything, and you say there are some things worth preserving? Let's try a few. I'll take a few. I have a few, by the way, but I don't want to give them until I hear a few. Yes? Don't be shy. It's not my nature to chop you back if you say a wrong answer, because there can't be any wrong answers here. We'll take care of each other if we come up with outlandish things, but at Holden we should do that in a nice Christian spirit.
There's one thought, Marty, that possibly the university is a, I don't know if you could call that a value.
Well, let's say the ideals to be embodied in the life of the university as a value.
A lot of people think that.
A lot of people think it. Would you say that the university as now constituted embodies a set of values which you think could be proposed to a new culture? Do you think the majority of students now in universities do?
No.
And that's a big chunk of the society. In other words, the most involved people in that part of the culture don't see
think
it.
That the university.
Do you think the Wisconsin...
Well, maybe the potential is there.
But we want to talk about a potential here. Okay, I'm not going to rule it out. I'm going to play a little game.
I'm not even sure if I have any. I don't have a single one. I just was thinking it might be.
Well, let's keep that one alive a little bit. Let's not kill any of them off. We need all the help we can get. So let's say there is an ideal, at least, embodied in a certain set of institutions, which suggests that men are free to learn, free to create a climate in which excellence may emerge, and so on, even if great numbers of people who make up that particular value embodiment do not now see it bearing it.
I disagree that it's a majority. I think there's a small minority who don't feel this.
What, within the university?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't.
Let's ask some university and college people here. The question is whether most of the people who now make up the student bodies of colleges and universities believe that colleges and universities as now constituted bear a set of values which they believe can be carried over simply into the future.
It seemed to be dependent upon a particular institution whether or not it was a majority or not. Mm-hmm. Some institutions it would be a large percentage and at others very negative.
Have you seen any Gallup polls on this? Do you know the Gallup poll findings?
There was one in my lifetime recently.
They had one in high school.
There was one in high schools.
But not
Cincinnati.
There has been one now in colleges.
Yeah.
About 2 weeks ago, findings from last May and June, I think. If I recall, I'm not up on the statistics, it suggests to me that the majority say they do not approve of the tactics of SDS, etc., but the majority feel that at least the internal revolution that SDS is pointing to, they agree with. That is, the inaccessibility of professors, the identification of universities with what is called the military-industrial complex, the fact that the university is beholden to so many parts of the larger society. The vast majority of students believe that though they're going about it wrong, they're pointing to something. So my impression, I'm not going to sit here all night and defend it, my impression is that the majority of students, while they may not go along with the full program of campus rebels, share their discontent over the way the university embodies them. But let's at least...
Church colleges?
Church colleges? Well, got a lot of church college people here.
It seems to me we're sort of skirting the issue.
All right.
We're talking about institutions rather than values.
Well, I'm trying to say institution which embodies a certain ideal of learning, dialogue, encounter, growth, excellence, etc. And university then, the reason I'm letting an institution lie around here is because we do want it to be a value that is not merely expressed as an idea, but is embodied somewhere. So we can let this, I think, lie that way.
Related to that one then would be free public education for all.
Okay, free public education as a... in other words, maybe one way to put it would be our society puts a premium on free public education for all. This is something we would want to carry over into the future. Do all large sectors of society agree, share, and benefit?
Closely identified with
free education would be growth in racial understanding, because as of now, many of the minorities are, because of one reason or another, are denied a part of this heritage of free public education.
Okay, you're tying that into the free, you're not getting into race yet, you're getting into free public, still in free public education.
Yes, but in this free public education, steps should be taken whereby those who for one reason or another have not been able to take advantage of this free education because of lack of background, programs should be set up to more fully integrate them into this type of education where they could more fully appreciate and take advantage of these privileges that are being offered to
us. But when you tie this into the next thing, do you say that, were you saying that racial concord is growing and this is a value that could be carried over as it's now embodied in our society?
I'm not saying that it is, but I would like to see the growth in this racial concord, and this would be closely tied in with the educational system, because the more you know about your neighbor, I would think that there would be less growth. There would be less hostility, because most of our hostility is based on ignorance.
But you're expressing this as a desire or a wish, but it's not a value now held by the society, right?
Right.
If it were held, we wouldn't have schools the way we now have them, right, in the cities.
Well, you want us to tell you what we've got, not what we
what we've got. In other words, when a critic of our society says we've got to tear it all down because every part of it is corrupt, we're saying, are there some things that are not so corruptible they have to be all the way torn down? Are there things you could defend to such a person as being a value that could be recognized as a positive?
Martin, yes. The concept,
yes,
of law and order fall in that category of value?
Not for me, but let's play around with it. I have never heard the concept of law and order expressed positively by the victims of the present system. If we mean
basic freedom that gives the ability or the power or the knowledge of to express and dissatisfaction with this system.
Okay, there we're getting to something that I would say pretty close to one of the values that is realized on a widespread basis. In a way, you're not far from the saying that we have pretty widespread freedom of speech, right? I mean, I'll defend that as a proposition. I don't think we have freedom of assembly in today's America, but I think we have freedom of the speech. You got to be a certain kind of.
Argue that one with you some other time.
Okay, but I do think we have freedom of speech, about as extensive as I can picture a society ever having it. In other words, short of a utopia, the Spock case would be a good illustration. The fact that he could. Admittedly, openly, by speech, advocate the violation of a law and have it upheld in the courts on constitutional grounds would be to me a suggestion that we have pretty widespread freedom of speech. Now, just how widely it's believed in by the whole society, I don't know, but our founding fathers put it there, and we've got something to work with. I'm less sure of freedom of assembly, as I say. I know too many people in my city who can't meet almost anywhere. You couldn't, for $1 billion, hold a rally on the block where Mayor Daley lives, if you're black. And the Constitution says you can.
The Constitution does not say you can.
The
Constitution gives you freedom of assembly as long as you're not violating the rights of others.
But it doesn't give you the freedom of domain of having an assembly anywhere you want to. The same group can meet many, many, many places besides Mayor Daley's block.
Suppose they've got
1,000 of us can't meet in your house either.
If they've got a reason.
I can't meet in Mayor Daley's house either. I don't intend to. I'm talking about the public street in front of his house.
Well, the women didn't have a right to clutter up Washington, you know, with funny dresses and funny hats either, you know. But it so happened that the grievance needed to be addressed to the individual who was there, and they brought the grievance to him. That's one of the rights of this country.
But I do believe, if we want to be proud of being Americans, I do believe we have, again, very widespread freedom of speech. We have very minimal censorship laws. I must say that I personally have never been inhibited from saying anything I wanted to say, where I wanted to say it. This would be very close to another value I was going to say is incarnate in our society. I think we have about as free a situation of freedom of religion as a society would ever have. We have limits. Jehovah's Witnesses cannot refuse to have their, I mean, they will try not to have a blood transfusion, and our courts can intervene. And I guess I agree with the courts. There's a little limit here. Black Muslims are not free to practice their full tenets, let's say, in prisons, because this runs into prison discipline. Christian Scientists have to drink fluoridated water even though they don't believe in it if they live in a city where water is fluoridated. A lot of these, I have no difficulty seeing why there are some inhibitions. I do think we're a little too impassioned when we chase little Amish kids out into Iowa cornfields because their schools aren't quite the same as others. But in a way, we muddle through on this, and I'm not looking again for utopia. So I do think we have a widespread, society-wide premium placed on freedom of religion. Do we or don't we? Is this one that rules a lot of people out? I don't know. Let me try this one on you. Given our the mixed blessings of our particular competitive acquisitive order, it seems to me as an historian that one of the values that has somehow lived and surprised in the middle of it all is a high valuation placed on cooperation in the voluntary sphere. That is, most people in most communities profess to be for the right of people to organize voluntarily in the community, whether block system or ward or precinct or church or benevolent society or what. I think these values are inculcated in children in our schools. We may be apathetic about the use of them, but it seems to me that there has been a fairly consistent strand in American society of a premium placed on this principle. Is this one that holds up? Let me try another one.
Free enterprise system.
Free enterprise system, he says. Is this widely believed in the society?
No, nothing.
Is there any large sector? What?
What did you mean by acquisitive?
Yes, I'm saying given our, I wasn't saying it's a good system, I'm saying given our acquisitive competitive system, in the middle of it, we have always presented as a premium to our children. We confuse our children. In church, we say, compete and cooperate. You know, do in the other churches, but be ecumenical with them. Yeah, we do.
You do?
Yes, we do. We say, don't be half safe. We worry if our little Lutheran girls marry Catholic boys, or vice versa. Maybe changing, maybe. Okay. But in general, we teach people to compete and to cooperate. And I'm saying that our particular acquisitive competitive system has always been tempered by a premium placed on cooperation. Now, somebody said the free enterprise system. Is this in range of all wide sectors of our society and so regarded as a transportable value?
I think the freedom of individual movement might be, as opposed to total free enterprise.
Does everybody have freedom of movement?
Well, I would say a large sector of the society has freedom of movement, at least in you can pick up your belongings and go someplace else. And
could Will Hertzfeld move to my town and join my church and live?
Kevin, now you said for a large segment. Now a large segment can't.
That's 20 million.
10%.
A large segment can.
Can what?
Move.
No, I'm saying if a large segment is out of it, then our society doesn't believe in it. It professes to. Right? I believe that almost everybody has freedom of speech. Almost everybody has freedom of religion. Almost everybody is inculcated with a spirit of cooperation. They may not live into it or so on, but I do believe that virtually the whole society is free to have this as a transportable value. I can say that 4/5 to 9/10 of our society can share what he's just described, but here it seems to me a value that is professed, but we cannot, you could not go to other nations of the world and say, look at America, this is a place that has freedom of movement for all its people.
Well, then you can't say that about the free enterprise either.
In other words, you're saying we don't have free enterprise anymore.
Not if you're going to count out the people who can't go ahead and start a company of their own because they simply cannot get the financing and so forth.
Well, you and him fight.
I don't know who. I'm saying that it isn't a value for our country if you're going to say it's not if a large percentage can't do it and a large percentage can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Same for labor. If what they were saying the other night about we can't get into labor unions and all holds, then there's a large segment of our country who can't even work.
Mm-hmm.
But at what they want. In other words, the value of being able to do what you like to do.
I disagree with you on that. There's a segment that can't work. You have to, when you're talking about labor, you have to talk about those who are qualified to work. And there is a segment that can't work in what they're qualified, but not a large segment.
But there's a large segment who can't get into what they'd like to because they can't. I mean, like for financial reasons. If it holds true that it's got $3,000 to get into a union, and a Negro doesn't have $3,000, then he can't get in, right?
But there isn't a large segment that is qualified to get in by other qualifications either. I mean, I'm not qualified to do many things, yet I can acquire the qualification.
Sure, well, I'm talking about acquiring them. When you get into a union, don't you start at the bottom and learn?
She's talking about a discussion we had the other night about Negroes not being able to get into the trade unions.
You don't have to know something already to get into a union and be an apprentice, do you? Isn't that when you start learning? Or am I?
There are, you're talking about trade unions. They were constituted years ago when they were actually trade unions. There are very few of the trade unions that work in the apprentice area anymore.
Try to be a plumber, a carpenter, a painter, electrician.
What?
Try to be any of those things.
There are literally thousands of places in this country where you can be a plumber, electrician, carpenter, or any other trade without being in a union.
Literally thousands of places where you can't, too.
Well, they've got a little free enterprise. Holden you can pack up and move.
But the thing is, with a system like that, sure, it has errors and shortcomings and faults, and it's a human institution. And the question is whether it can be improved and made better, and not just that the whole thing should just be done away with.
No, that isn't the question. What I was saying is, would it be considered not a value in our society today?
Most Americans have the opinion that the free enterprise system is a good thing and it's been good to the country and it will continue to be so, and they would like to keep it until we are shown by another society that they can put somebody on Mars faster than us or do better.
Letting the whole country. You're only saying that this is a free enterprise, it's all right for those who will let do it, but we're not going to let everybody do it.
Well, it should be one of those situations where we don't yet have a utopia in that situation.
Well, I think let's talk this. Let's talk this one up as an ambivalent one. Some of the people see it, some don't, and it's a fairly technical, separate topic. I'm trying to think of all the things we should be doing tonight. It would be fun to pursue that one as such. And let's just say it was one we're a little less sure of as to how widespread the consensus is on it and how transportable the value is and how many limits there are to it. It's a very complicated one, and I think just so we keep the agenda rolling, let's just say we've tossed it in, but we're less sure, many of us are less sure of it. Can we just for fun have five from people that are under 26, the younger half?
How about the concept of the family as basic organizational?
Okay, then the first question is, don't have to be utopian about it, but the other thing is it widely believed in the society, and is it reasonably accessible as a value system to all? Would you take the American family as now constituted, not only as believed in, but as somehow lived out, and go around the world and say, be like we are, and this would be a pretty good thing. Why don't you comment, whoever said it behind the light there?
No, I was just going to throw it out. Mm-hmm. Because it's changing so quickly now, you know, in the last
Kenneth,
friend?
Kenneth has an interesting book out about alienated youth. Maybe he has something to say about his family.
Does anybody know what he does have to say?
Well, that there's a segment of our society, and the group that he studied were upper middle class Harvard students and everything who weren't hippies. They didn't look like hippies. They looked like pretty clean cut people. And his studies and everything found that the value system of the family and the value system of the society that they lived in, these people were all really turned off by them.
Do you, let's not ask first of the accuracy of the portrait, but the world gets its picture of the American family from things like the film The Graduate, etc., which also is by far the most popular film in recent American history. I guess it's the biggest gross ever for a film that didn't start out at special reserved seat prices. So if that's so, and the studies, interestingly enough, were that while young people saw it several times, their elders also saw it. And to the surprise of people who made the studies, it didn't turn out to be a generation gap film. The elder generation seemed to see itself in this as much as the younger generation saw themselves in it. The world gets its picture of our family from it. For a moment, if it's an accurate picture, do you think there'd be anything that's being conveyed as being a value believed in by our society?
Sure.
What?
Jesus loved Mrs. Robinson.
Okay, that was a that was a little song on the side. Now, is it an inaccurate picture? I'm just going to say that while the spoken for and believed in family is around, I doubt whether I could get most young people I know to say the family as now constituted embodies in general the kind of values they'd like to transport to a coming generation, to a new culture in a different world. I really question it. What is it, 1/3 divorce rate now? Pretty well shows that we aren't very firm in our understanding of it, and I think almost any of us autobiographically would know enough shook up about it. Now, we are going to talk about the family a little later this evening, not from the wits context, but from the cultural context we've been talking about this week, so we can come back to that a little later. Okay, that was one from, it sounded a few months under 26.
How about keeping busy?
Keeping busy.
Or having something to do.
No.
Talking about the work ethic.
Stemming from something not quite as intense as the old value of industry and thrift, but something that, I don't know, at least I inherited, the idea that you should have something to do at all times. It's always on
my report card. And makes good
use of his time.
Good point.
But I'm just curious. I've been going across country really slowly this summer, and it seems to me that the further west I get, the lazier people get. I've seen more cowboys in bars west of Mississippi than I care to count, and more bars than I care to count. And I'm coming from the Northeast, and I'm just sort of curious exactly what the status is of this value in our country as a whole.
They're not lazy drinkers. They're hard drinkers.
They're hard working
drinkers.
Well, I'm a little at a loss as to know how to grab this one.
Teachers have to.
Look, aren't we a work oriented society?
Yeah. Well, we spend as much time at leisure as we do at work.
We feel guilty about it. How long has the 8-hour day been going on in this country? 40-hour week.
It's gone. Not for me either.
Well, let's, is the American work ethic believed in by all sectors of our society, accessible to them, and do the young people coming up aspire to what they saw in their elders in the work ethic? My impression is they don't, but they should speak for themselves. The students I talk to ordinarily are quite negative about the fact that their father brings home a briefcase every night, belts down a martini, looks around for what's vestigial about the family, hits the evening news, closes the door, and gets at the papers, or that dad, in the nature of things, and I'm not knocking anybody, I'm just saying, I just know, I used to be a pastor of a suburban parish, it was nearly normative for the men to be gone from Sunday night until Friday noon. They had to be. The kid grew up not knowing father. He came home weekends, dead tired, sick of hotels and motels, wanted to put his feet up on a hassock, and mama wanted to kick up her heels, and so the weekend was just as tense. This is the portrait I get from young people of what they saw the work ethic becoming, and they are doing what they can not to have to acquire it. Now, is this general?
I think you're talking about a very small segment of the upper white middle class.
How many men here carry briefcases home?
This is a pretty special.
What's that? Pardon?
I don't.
Three. Well, I'd like to hear more from. We've got two from up here, and we're going to leave that around. I'm not going to knock it.
I want to hear from the kids in the crowd as to whether they feel like they don't have any time from their dad.
I'd rather not have show of hands. I'd rather have expressions. Show of hands is not fair to people who don't want to be counted. Well, here we were jocular. A couple of us have no principles, so we threw our hands up. But I'd rather, I think it's fairer to people who, when they come to Holden Village, we're not necessarily committed to being polled. I think it's much fairer if we just say, are there people who would like to volunteer to express themselves on this?
I think there are some that do, but I don't think young people in general reject the work ethic per se. I think they are, or at least I and others that I know are trying to take it one step further. We do. Don't be valued in work per se. I think we're searching even more and more today for work that has meaning, mm-hmm. beyond just bringing home the dollar, beyond just bringing home the paycheck. And this is why so many of us are hung up, for instance, when we graduate from college, about entering the labor market. You know, we're not really just turned on by a lot of the jobs that are available in the market today. We're questing for something that isn't being met all.
So it's not the, in your view, the work ethic, but how to humanize it.
Right. Yeah.
Would that be a fair way to put it for a lot of people?
Well, this work ethic, too, is a little funny. When I was working in the factory, Ford Motor Company, out in Michigan, the union wouldn't let me work more than, I could do what the union would let me work in an hour and a half, but I had to be there 8 hours. The union was enforcing me to be lazy, you know. I would just as soon work my hour and a half and go home. Mm-hmm.
Again, though, you would be reinforcing his point that it would be humanizing the present system would be a value that would be more meaningful to you than to say you're going to knock the work ethic as such.
Well,
you do define man in part by what he makes, how he makes it, how seriously he goes about it.
Yeah, I think I have the work ethic as little as I can. But still, I don't think it hasn't survived like it used to, because it is a do as little as you can thing, at least in my experience in factories and construction jobs, and, except in farm labor. If you're not tired at the end of the day, as a worker, you've really, done a nasty.
any other young people want to express themselves on this particular one? Otherwise, I want to move on to a third one from somebody of the student generation. Let's try a third one from the student generation. What was the first one? Family and work. Okay.
The acquiring of possessions, that sort of thing.
Is this a value that the way we do it, you think we could transplant to future generations as being a good, and other societies would recognize as a good?
Others might that I don't.
Pardon?
Others might, other cultures might that I don't.
Uh-huh. Does he mean property and rights and stuff?
You mean cars and color TV and nice new things. In world imagery, again, right or wrong, in world imagery, are we admired for the way we do this?
Envy, but not admired.
It seems to me that here's a point where there's conflict again that kind of ties together or has implications for several values, and basically maybe a generational one. The under 30 or under 25 crowd never went through the Depression, never had to invest its energies into getting and acquiring the basic necessities for life as those who went through the Depression had to. And therefore, I mean, those who went through the Depression valued what they didn't have. Now we're at a point, as you introduced this whole thing, where we have things, and you really can't value what you have so much of.
In a way, though, I think that's good, because I think almost we're the first generation, really, in the history of the world that has had enough things that we begin to realize that things aren't that important. You know, that life isn't acquiring things. And it's given us a chance to reflect on maybe some values that are more than things. We've got these things now, and we're not always thinking about getting things, thinking about something more than things.
I don't understand.
But then you'd be partly freeing yourself from the value that you said we profess.
Yeah, I don't know if it's fair to picture ourselves as quite so noble. Well, I think our rhetoric is certainly...
You drive your father's car, you still look at your father's television you paid for, you still wear the clothes he bought
Not
for
me.
You still wear college round money he spent for you.
I'd like to hear what young people are calling things. You know, I don't.
Could you hear him? He'd like to know what you're calling things.
You know, is a car that you drive to work a thing, or is it two cars that are things? The second car. Two cars are two things.
Professor Johnson, you're the philosopher. That's a pretty clear statement, isn't it? Two cars are two things. I vote for that. I think the intent of this question is to say the American premium on what we might call conspicuous consumption, not just having a boat, but a plush houseboat, not just having a car that gets you somewhere rather attractively, but having a Porsche plus a VW. In other words, the thing that gives you status over your neighbor, the thing far beyond mere necessity, comfort, and pleasure, is that a value you're saying is something we'd like to let the rest of the world know ought to be good for them? Or are we saying the good things of life in reasonable supply?
I think the possibility of doing this is a value. The possibility of taking a 3-month vacation to Europe or something would be a value.
What's interesting to me is at Christmas time, most pages of most catalogs say, for the man who has everything. And have you ever noticed how hard, if you're middle class, how hard it is to give somebody something because you know they have it? They already have an electric knife. I like to think about that one. I know that if it hadn't existed, I would never have dreamed of it. First they have to create a taste in me for it, then I have to get it. Now it's such that I suppose if we have dinner guests invited and the electric knife broke, we either have to cancel it or have the boys jiggle the table under a knife. So we really
give them an electric fork.
Yeah. So we do have a little difficulty finding new slots for things because most of us have everything. Well, I think we've ridden this one enough. Pardon? Yeah. Okay. Let's just say we've worked this one enough that we are at least thinking about it. Tonight we're not going to solve anything, and I hope I'm being a fair discussion leader and not trying to bring all of these to resolution. I sometimes tell you where I stand on them, but I'm not trying to clomp on people who are disagreeing with each other or me. That's three we've heard. Let's hear another.
Well, sir?
Yes?
I would say that, you know, the basic acquisition of goods, I think that would be really good.
Uh-huh.
Well, I sort of like to have breakfast in the morning and dinner at night.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes from, you know, my father going out and working his 8-hour day. And I would call that acquisition of goods.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that is a definite value. Because without it, we'd all starve.
Well, anybody watched me eat this week would find it pretty hard for me to be authentic and to disagree with you on that. Well, that's three. I'd like to still hear one or two more so we know that people are thinking about this.
One thing I would like to see is to get out of this rat race of keeping up with the Joneses. Sure, everybody's got to work to earn their living, to buy the groceries, to pay the rent, to pay the utilities. But I don't think that we should go out and possess for the sake of possessing two cars, a home, a summer home, a winter home, vacations to Europe every year, just to show that you've got status. It just doesn't really...
So that's still related to... What's interesting to me tonight is, let's just say, insofar as what we're hearing here, our representative expressions of a certain sector of society, and I'm highly aware of how sectored we are. We're white, we are almost all middle class, we are almost all upper Midwest and West Coast, new parts of the country, etc., etc. So I'm all aware of that, but what's interesting to me is within this context, we don't have any Appalachian poor, we have very little black. We have very little of certain establishments. Within this context, what's interesting to me is our basic question is, how do we humanize a value that we see to be a value that got corrupted? We haven't, in this group, given up entirely on the family, on the meaning of work, on having possessions. We're questioning how to go about them. And there is a way in which I think this is widespread in other elements of our culture. That is, it is true that the dropout youth, in part, does live off existing affluence. He is normally the son or daughter of affluent. Somebody help me out on that. Affluent. I won't forget it now. One or two more?
Nope.
Yes.
You can just skip this if it's a totally different topic.
Mm-hmm.
But I was interested in this lady's comment that we need to work to acquire all these things because I'm not all that sure that we need to work to acquire them. I think we're going to, you know, there is a possibility of not having this as value, you know, as valuable.
In other words, you're picturing that the good life could get along with a lot less.
No, I'm picturing that I'm questioning whether work is necessary to hold, you know, work as we know it now, vocation of, you know, being a fireman is necessary to produce this. Maybe this talks to Willie's point of the guaranteed annual income.
What would you substitute?
Well, this is just what I suggested, guaranteed annual income.
Well, as I understand it, she's not saying this is true for all people in society. She's saying
all the guys that have the work ethic.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I'm questioning. Right? Yeah. Is the work ethic, because it's been known for a long time that there were the resources available through technology to eliminate the need for a man to work 40 hours a week. As such, these technological advances also took away the identity that man was receiving from this 40-hour work week, meaning that there was either a void or he had to find his identity someplace else. You're saying that, you know, how is this possible? Well, I don't think that even needs to be a question anymore. It is possible.
It does when you pay taxes like I do. I guarantee you it does.
Well,
you're
saying that we should stop work, or just work fewer hours?
Well, no, I'm saying that the industrial society as it exists right now has the potential of eliminating the need for man to work as we know it right now.
But not to eliminate work.
Well,
you
call it what you will. If you go in at 8 o'clock in the morning.
You think that we can get to the point where man doesn't work at all, the machines will do it all?
I'll stand on her side. It's possible today, ma'am. It's going to be more possible. The nurse explained how.
Oh.
How do you eliminate people out of the hospital? Okay.
A man doesn't have to work like a horse. They have machines to do that.
The point is, the advent of the computer and the advent of modern technology, which is hard for a lot of you to see, but those in the field know that it's just starting, absolutely, just on the very bottom. And there'll always be a need for a few, maybe 1% of the population, to do the physical and human judgment sort of thing. But it's absolutely possible for 1% of this population to support the 99% and give us necessity.
What about the 1%, or are you going to be the 99%?
Let me ask the question this way. Let me ask the question this way. As you project in the future, 20, 40, 60, and 80 years from now, will it be a bigger problem finding ways to keep people busy or finding people to do things that need to be done?
People will either find new meaning in personal relationships or out of the frustration of not having work will get, seems to me this has happened before in history, where people are restless. They're going to be more and more restless if they don't have work to keep them busy.
So the problem is going to be finding things to keep people busy with, you're saying?
Yes. And I think the value there...
Yeah. That's work right now.
I think the value there, Marty, is the interpersonal relationship.
You know, it's really interesting. My family and I, if we get on a plane and we fly like from San Francisco to New York, they've got all sorts of things to keep the kids busy. You know, they've got doodads dangling from the things, you know, and you know, the planes are built now so that they can play with stuff and, you know, and it doesn't disintegrate. But there are four or five guys up front in the cockpit, you know, who are literally bored to death. And they don't know whether to take paint by the number sets up to them or... or dress the stewardesses in more appropriate things, or what, you see.
I see this is
one of the real problems in the future for the affluent, you know.
I participated in a seminar at Eastman Kodak a couple of years ago, and they showed us a room where formerly 30 people used to sort film as it came out and saw to it had gotten the right envelope and so on. And now there were two ladies, each of whom worked 4 of the 8-hour days, watching 2 sets of numbers come by, and only if the numbers were out of line would they interrupt the process. Now, Eastman was doing everything it could to make life bearable for them. There were long coffee breaks, there were ping pong rooms, there were televisions, anything they could do. And the Eastman people told us they could do this all over the place if they wanted to. They had the know-how to do this in many more departments. We made a study of a bookbinder in Philadelphia who had employed 300 people. He automated, he now employs 80. He was a good guy, and he spent 4 years finding what 220 other people could do somewhere else in the society. Now, as I read it, I don't pretend to be an expert on this, it is not true that computerization has meant this in all fields. For example, they tell me that life insurance is the most computerized, or insurance, the most computerized of our businesses, and is also one of the largest growing workforces in our business. So I'm not saying it always works that way, but there are many kinds of things in which I think what they're pointing to is it is a technological possibility to greatly reduce the numbers. It is a humanistic question whether we should do this and free people to do other things. We're back to the question of how to humanize our work and our leisure, I think.
Well, I think the value we take forward wrong there, because just look at all the technological advancements, just like the telephone, how highly computerized that is. Yet look how much the workforce has increased in the telephone communications business, to manufacture, to handle the switches and everything else. The computer that was going to relieve the workload actually created workload in just the insurance business and all these others. The computer is used properly, takes care of routine, the things that keep the youth here from going crazy as they check item 111, you know, this thing of the Eastman Kodak. Not the computer, but the volume of business we have would all go crazy from boredom. And the computer will actually create jobs, not take them away. So I think your basic concept of 1% of the population of computers will solve the work problem is totally false. I think it will cause more work.
It does. Create work that you have to have more specialized training in, then you have the untrainable, and this is where the problem is. The ones that are not able to train to do these highly technical jobs.
Well, I think we're back on an interesting point, and I'm not capable of settling it or interested in settling it. I'm going to make my final comment on that when we leave. Let's just say this is another one of those that we're ambivalent about, but it's there, and there are certain sets of values that we at least want to relate to it. That gave some people time to see if there are any others we want to throw in.
Don't we still have a value of change, you know, a value of change or experimentation or innovation or a certain amount of risk-taking is still a good thing, it's still the American way, although many of us young people question whether the older generation still feels it.
Well, I'm for that one. I do believe that it has been a part of the American experiment to experiment. And I do believe, as a Christian, that this is a very high human value, and I would like to see it keep on going, and I would like to, as a religious man, be one of the people who would normally say, I'd like to stand around and say, don't cut off adventure, don't limit experiment. It's not an absolute. There are areas where I would like perhaps to see limitation of experiment. But in general, the premium placed on change. Now, as he phrases it, he thinks this has been a value in American life, but questions whether it is still embodied in much of the older generation. Is that what you're saying? Mm-hmm. Any other?
Let's put it in a more scientific value.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
Isn't that pretty widely held by both generations?
A premium placed on
scientific? I'm also thinking of politically as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Free to experiment with our institutions.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And innovate.
Freedom of research tied into that too?
Yes, that would be part of it. I think we really do have two things going, though, if you'd say science and politics. If so, they're two vastly different things, because some people who would be for experiment in science would be opposed to experiment with constitution.
How about freedom of inquiry and freedom to interpret the results?
Well, I would say, as I read it, I think it's a very widespread value held in our society, and it may be one way of getting back to Fred's first point, and we may have gotten thrown off a little bit when you embody it in the university as it now is, because I really don't believe that most young people in universities, or professors when they're honest, believe in the university as it's now constituted. But I do believe they are for
the same thing as the values.
But that's why I say we're better off now when we get into things like the values of inquiry, research, expression. I think that may be a better way to do it than even to bring up the institution called the university. Well, that was another one more, and we're finished.
It seems to me the values that we've accepted without calling ambivalent or question or so on, every one of them has started out with freedom too. Maybe freedom per se is the value we're after.
He says freedom per se is the value we're after. High premium placed on freedom to most people?
How do you interpret this freedom? Is it freedom to do what you want to do or freedom to be what you are?
Do you think it's a growing value in our society or a lessening one? Would you interpret the, again, let's not psychoanalyze all the voters, but the trend we hear is to, if you take the Declaration of Independence or take the Bill of Rights or take anything like this, disguise the phrases a little bit and try it out on the population at large, they come in overwhelmingly against them. I don't think most American people, I know the courts are supposed to read the ballots, but I don't think that most people actually have gone along with the tendency of the Supreme Court on many of its issues. I have a hunch that if we'd poll the American people on freedom of the press, they wouldn't agree with the Supreme Court in recent decisions. Am I right? Most people I know think the press has too much freedom, that you shouldn't have naked people running around on Broadway. Is this a why? I don't ever extrapolate from my own experience and say that's
it. Freedom of speech, right? Buy the freedom of press.
What about the
if you put up obscenity laws and topless waitresses and all these things to a national vote, would they agree with the courts? I don't think so. But I don't want to say that because the people I meet and the things I read tell me this, it's true. It's my set of impressions. I like to hear from other people.
You mean the older generation and the younger generation wouldn't agree with the Supreme Court position?
Well, the population as a whole I was talking about. How big a difference in generations there'd be, I don't know. What do you think?
I was trying to pin you down
there. Uh-huh. I think many more in the younger generation would be for and are for extensions of freedom, even at great risk to the society, whereas most of us are asking questions about how do we begin to limit the freedoms because we're afraid that the freedoms we have may lead to the disintegration of the society. This is an impression I have.
That's not what the studies in the high school show.
Okay, that's why I'd like to hear.
What about the freedom of the movement?
Just a second, please. I'd like to hear his
report. The studies in the high school definitely show that if the Bill of Rights were put up to a vote in the high school, that we wouldn't have it.
We would or would not?
Would not.
Except, go out of the Constitution.
Except for the one about the right to bear arms. That's growing in favor. Inhibitions on freedom, he's saying. I don't know that those statistics. I just have to take people's word for that. But I do believe that if there are very widespread interests in society, I think it's much easier to get elected. I was in Jackson, Mississippi not long ago, and I know that in city after city in Mississippi, just before an election, a mayor who wants to remain in office will raid a theater that's showing a risky movie, and he knows well that the courts will overturn his action, but he doesn't care because it will get him elected. Now, I don't think Mississippi is all that different from a lot of other parts of the country, so I do think there are some strong hungers among our people to limit expression. Yes?
You already had a different way of doing it.
How the young people feel about the values of individualism versus the values of community. In the hippie community, there's a strong value placed upon community.
All right.
Yet there's also a strong value placed upon individualism in the same place.
Well, is this a thing that mystifies us old folks? that in the same moment when you're told do your own thing, you are told to do it in a context of co-responsibility, which I think is a very biblical combination, even if a little paradoxical. Well, let's hear from some. You know, I have a question, and I just, since I leave tomorrow and I can get run out on a rail or something, I want to ask a very McLuhan-ish question, and I don't think it's loaded. I just like to hear. What interests me this week is that most of the time, the staff and young people are up there, and the paying guests and the faculty and senior citizens and others are down here. And McLuhan has a lot of theories about the medium and the message and how we get involved and uninvolved and so on. I can't picture that Holden has a rule that says save the best seats for the paying guests, does it?
We beat them.
We beat them. Courteous.
Okay, naturally courteous. No, I'm interested because there is a sense in which a lot of questions go through my mind. All right, that's what I was wondering is whether you're feeding my paranoia or substantiating McLuhan or what. In other words, I don't know whether we're being watched and scrutinized.
No,
and
we turn to our childhood, we feel like eavesdroppers.
That didn't sound like an under 26 voice.
In spirit,
okay. I'm being playful. Pardon? No, I am being playful about it, but it is an interesting little subtle dynamic of what goes on here all the time. I find myself almost always in a different context. I find myself being pelted by my students and so on, and being eavesdropped on by their parents or other people at the edges. So it's kind of a reversal on it.
You've got a very pretty person on your right there, Marty. Why don't you check and see how old she is?
I don't think anybody here ought to be publicly polled.